God bless Governor Chris Christie for closing all the ports in New Jersey and allowing the beach for himself. And God bless America. You are listening to another episode of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Welcome to another episode of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast, where we are not shut down thanks to the New Jersey state government shutting down. I am your host, Ben, a.k.a. the Marvelous Ziggy. Joining me is a man who lives right next door to the state of New Jersey. How's the shutdown going over there, Taser?
You know what? Chris Christie, I don't think Chris Christie could give away goodwill to anybody and they'd accept it. This man is... That he hasn't been already tossed out of office is actually a miracle, in my opinion.
That's, you know, I mean, look at
it.
We got Donald Trump elected. That just tells you the state of American politics right now.
That's actually a very good point.
So, yeah.
Good point.
I make things political. Chris Christie, you're a piece of shit. And joining us is the man who could possibly pose as Chris Christie's doppelganger, Jonathan Cotwright. Jonathan, welcome back.
Cold-blooded.
Okay.
Actually,
I got the same physique he is. I just have more hair. I will give Christie balls for doing what he did. He has to have mob ties, you know, in order to be able to pull that off. But
he's got balls.
You know, it is Jersey. Yep.
Hi.
That being said, though, I'm pretty sure in an alternate reality, Chris Christie is like some high-ranking mob boss, and in here, he's just a bumbling idiot. And, of course, joining us is the man who is playing house, Mr. Brian Powers. Brian, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot. I apologize for not being here the last show. I was Wi-Fi deprived, as it were, but happy to be back. You guys put on a hell of a show, and loved the Run the Jewels intro as well. That was just super fucking dope. So
once again, that was Taze's idea. I want to point that out. All right, ladies and gentlemen, in case this is your first episode, we are the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. We are a podcast dedicated to all things Marvel-related. And when I mean all things Marvel-related, I mean all things Marvel-related. So let's start off with some news that'll just make everybody mad. And I'm talking about the Marvel Inhumans official trailer. Now, this shit is supposed to launch in, 2 months, right? In September. The first two episodes will be on IMAX. And oh boy! Expectations were already low when Entertainment Weekly released that first image of the quote-unquote Inhumans. Well, now we got our first trailer, and I can say the only two things I liked about the trailer was Maximus the Mad, because he actually seemed pretty interesting. It could be provocative, despite that the settings around him are shit. And Lockjaw's actually in it, except he looks like a normal dog. But other than that, this looks bad. This looks like trash. There's a reason Marvel waited this long to put the trailer out for it, because, I mean, the thing releases in theaters in 2 months. If you had confidence, we would have seen a trailer back in, what, June? July? May? Because they...
Yeah, this sort of carries the same kind of weight of, like, if they don't allow press reviews to be posted until, like, the day before the movie comes out. It sort of reeks of that. So.
Right, and it looks trash. It looks awful. Black Bolt doesn't know how to act with his face. He looks constipated half the time. I understand the challenge with Black Bolt is that he can't speak, and, you know, he has to, and you have to need to find an actor who can act through his body and his face, and this guy just fails. Like, this guy just, like, looks like he's straining, I gotta go to poop bad, but I can't say anything. That's what he looks like to me. He's straining himself. It's not his fault, but the costume looks like shit. Everything about the Inhumans looks like shit. I'm not even an Inhumans fan, right? I've had a vendetta against Inhumans since, what, 2-3 years ago when they started making the Inhumans the bigger thing over the X-Men? And basically,
yeah, it's been about that long. So.
Yeah. Here, there's nothing about the Inhumans that makes them look special. They just look like ordinary people. That is it. And I think that's the biggest disappointment. And I can't help but think, like, if this was, like, can you, like, imagine if this was getting the MCU treatment, right? And I understand we don't always agree with what the MCU does, but imagine if we would have gotten, like, a similar to what we got with Thor in terms of the set. Can you imagine Adelan with the actual fucking budget? You know,
the MCU production value would have been a major helping factor.
Right, you could have put in the exotic Inhumans, you could have... I guarantee you they would have looked a lot more resembling to the Inhumans versus the shit that's going to be on television. Like, it's just, it's a sad look, and it's like, this is Jack Kirby's, if he was alive today, it would be his 100th birthday. And, like, what a shit way to celebrate his birthday by throwing out this product. Because you can tell they don't care. It's just a way to keep... It's just a pissing match between Marvel TV and Marvel Cinematic. And so we get this. This should have been a movie. Even if it didn't come out till after Infinity War, it should have been a movie. It deserved a movie of some grandeur. And now we're left with this. This is terrible. Taser, you have a lot more affinity for the Inhumans, but what did you think of this?
Well, hold on. Aren't they releasing this first as a movie?
It was shot on IMAX cameras, and they're releasing it as a special IMAX presentation. But it is, for all intents and purposes, a just expensively shot TV show. That's really what it is.
So it's not a movie, but it will be released in the movies. Yes.
Yeah. Not with a film budget, though. It's basically with a TV budget.
No, but exactly my point. Well, it's like I said online, it doesn't look awful, but that doesn't mean it's good. You know, we have and like what you had said before, they don't look special. They don't look unique. They look like a bunch of people who hid away in a commune with, you know, weird clothing and decided, hey, maybe we might need to join, you know, the rest of the fucking planet for whatever reason. There's nothing that catches the eye, you know. There's nothing that, you know, that there's nothing interesting. There's nothing that makes you want to watch it. It's just kind of there, and I think that's the greatest crime committed against the franchise, that they're plain. I don't know what else to do with it, and that this is coming out so soon, you know, and it's left at kind of a meh level. It's not even ew. It's like eh. I don't feel like, yeah, I want to watch this. I don't feel like, no, it's evil, take it away. I don't care a whole lot, you know, and that's not a good thing, you know. It should evoke some type of response, whether it be, you know, strongly negative or strongly positive. As it is, it's not doing either, you know. So if this thing didn't exist, I guess it wouldn't really matter a whole lot to me. I'll watch it, you know, because of course we're going to do it for the show. But had I not been doing this show, I probably wouldn't touch it at all. There you go,
Brian.
Well, gee whiz. I don't know. I mean, I wasn't wowed by it. I mean, see, things like this to me always kind of blow my mind, because you always get the people who say, like, as far as, like, just the production value, you know, you've mentioned it, but I've seen cosplayers at cons do it better than this design department put together the Inhumans interpretation of costumes. Like, really, it just kind of reeks of laziness, and, I, you know, you shouldn't be surprised, I guess, because this falls under the realm of, technically, Marvel TV. And, you know, you get the same thing with Marvel TV, where you get this Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter, where, you know, they don't have the biggest production value, so they get by on keeping things very minimalist and trying to make do with the storyline and the narrative, and they make do with what they have. When you have a show like this that demands grandeur and spectacle, and you know, it's weird and it's otherworldly, and you don't get that, it just sort of fizzles out and doesn't really deliver, like, because, you know... Black Bolt and Medusa and a large portion of the royal family look like they're just kind of lazy, casual cosplayers. Like, what would a casual Black Bolt do? He'd probably be like a cool leather jacket, and he wouldn't wear a face mask or whatever. But, you know, God forbid we actually get – because he's in a suit at one point in the trailer, like a business suit. It's like, get the fuck are you doing? This is Black Bolt. He's the king of the Inhumans. He's supposed to be having the tuning fork and the wings and the cosmic energy that sort of emanates around him, you know? And it just kind of falls flat.
Wait, hold on. Brian, would you say that basically they look like a bunch of lazy Comic-Con attendees?
Yes, I would absolutely say that. Almost say these are the people who TV shows go out of their way to signal out, like, whoa, look how much work and attention they put into their costume. There's a 10 times more talented cosplayer in the background who put his heart and soul into his costume, but these are the ones who get the spotlight because they have pretty faces. And that's essentially what it boils down to. It's a bunch of pretty faces and not-so-well-put-together costumes. And, you know, Lord knows what the plot – I mean, I know what the plot basically revolves around. It's Maximus and Black Bolt's – God, you can't even really say his real name because it's just Blackagar. It's longer than his fucking superhero name. How awkward is that going to be? But regardless, getting back to the matter at hand, you know, I enjoyed Maximus. He's clearly chewing the scenery and having fun with it. And I will admit, the moment where he sees Black Bolt kind of twitch in anger, where he's like, what are you going to do? Kill me? And then he actually like looks like he's going to kill him for a hot second, and he flinches like, oh, shit, fuck, 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 get him, put it there. You know, that part I actually kind of got a kick out of. And, of course, Lockjaw is Lockjaw. He was going to be a spectacle no matter what. He's going to be the next baby Groot, mark my words. But as far as, like, wow factor, this does not have it. This just completely lacks in spectacle, which is something that the Inhumans demand, you know? It's something that can't be faked, and it's something when it's not there, it's clearly noticeable. And in this case, it was very, very noticeable. So, you know, it's tough to say, but you know, that's just that's what I think. So.
Okay.
John?
I just watched. Hello?
Yes, we hear you.
Okay. I just watched it in silence over here on Facebook. Who the hell decided to do a low-written version of Game of Thrones mixed in with MCU, you know, TV cinematic, and decided to get a Ben Affleck lookalike for Black Bolt?
Yeah, isn't that also just the guy from Game of Thrones? Isn't he from Game of Thrones?
Well, the guy, the best part you said, Maximus, he just was on Game of Thrones as Ramsay Bolton, and he plays psychotic, really good. You haven't seen him on Game of Thrones? You need to do yourself a favor, watch the last couple of seasons of.
I'm talking. Isn't Black Bolt's actor also on that? I could have sworn.
No,
he wasn't.
I don't know, but all I know is he looks like a clone of Ben Affleck from Batman, and he looks constipated.
Oh my, his name is Anson Mount. Anson Mount plays Black Bolt.
That's an
unfortunate
name. There's a dirty joke there. I swear, yeah. There's a dirty joke there.
And he was mounted all right by Lockjaw.
Anyway,
I have to agree, it doesn't look that good. The two best things are Lockjaw and Maximus. And, I liked how they were tying it. Bill, do IMAX, so it'll look even shittier when on big screen. Low rent. It looks like they decided to mix in Marvel, Game of Thrones, and Once Upon a Time, and jumble it up and see what kind of crap they can come out with. I don't have high hopes for this, and which is kind of taking me off. But I do like the Inhumans until they decide to go, oh, we're going to make them the next X-Men. And it's like, no, they're not. Never have been, never will. And it just, yeah. The only reason why they'll even last one season is because it's Disney owned, and that'll fill up a time slot that they probably don't want to waste on something else.
I mean, don't forget, I do want to reiterate that this is under the purview of the guy who Kevin Feige fought so hard to get out from under in order to increase be able to increase the creativity of what they can do with their properties over at the movie universe. But
and
again,
what
this falls
doing over there.
And again, this falls under the purview of the same people who do, you know, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agents of Carter, you know, Agent Carter, and, you know, the ones that can't really get by with the big budget, so they got to get by with story. But when your story demands spectacle or whatever, and it doesn't have that, it just sort of falls flat. So.
Yeah. Bleh. That's all I can say. Bleh.
Bleh. Very eloquent, John. I approve.
All right, well, let's move on to other shenanigans, and let's talk about how the fact that Fantastic Four, Fox wants to make a new kid-friendly Fantastic Four. Okay, John, I don't... Okay, one, I don't... What the fuck are you complaining about? Really? Kid-friendly and Fantastic Four. Since, like, outside... Like, I don't understand what the problem is. I want to know. Please tell me. Please tell me right now.
It's not so much I have a problem with it being kid-friendly, because, you know, one of the more kid-friendly titles or properties they have out there would be Fantastic Four.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. You're laughing, you're groaning doesn't make any fucking sense.
But the problem is, it's Fox. Reboot. Again. Give it to Marvel. Just give it to Marvel and get another ironclad grip on the X title, you know, X properties that you have, and let Marvel do something with it. It just, that's what I'm, it's just not another, anyway, go on.
After the shit show that was, I mean, we chronicled the shit show that was Fantastic. So, like, I understand why if they do it. Look, it was inevitable considering that movie flopped. That movie flopped hard. So it was only inevitable that they would try it again because they're not Sony. Fox is doing fine than versus Sony was doing when they had agreed. Remember, Sony still owns the rights to Spider-Man. It's just a licensing agreement. So Fox has no incentive to do one of those. They don't. Even with Fantastic Four balling, because they can rely on the X-Men titles, X-Men movies, because Days of Future Past, I mean, not Days of Future Past, Apocalypse did relatively okay, Deadpool blew things out of the water, and then what was the other one that's coming out? Logan did relatively well, too, also had a good word of mouth. So, you know, they don't have to, and, you know, fine, do kid-friendly, just don't make it stupid kid-friendly, like the 05 and 07 Fantastic Four films were.
I mean, like you're saying, family-friendly can work, because that was basically the premise of Future Foundation back when they were running that series in Marvel. You know, it was Franklin Valeria and their little kid brain trust running around with the Fantastic Four and kind of doing their own thing, and that kind of seems to be essentially what they're going for here, because they already said Franklin and Valeria are going to be the focus of the new series, with the Thing and the Human Torch showing up, you know.
So it sounds like we're not getting an origin, but rather they've been Fantastic Four for a couple of years, and... We're just jumping into it, which I think that'd be don't do another fucking origin, because this will be the second time we've seen an origin, and it's gonna piss Taser off that we're not gonna get a rocket ship explosion. Just don't do that.
He can find rocket ship explosions in any other movie, but I mean, actually, in the article, they kind of compared it more tonally to The Incredibles more than anything else, which I think is an admirable thing to shoot for, even if you don't necessarily hit the mark. And don't get me wrong, Fox has more misses than hits. But if you're going to aspire to be anything, that's not a bad place to start if you want to do a family-geared superhero movie, you know? So.
Taser?
Eh.
Oh, come on. Come up with something. Come up with some sort of emotion.
I'll say this. It being revamped as a kids movie, that just, you know, the rage. Rage. You know, all kinds of rage. Where's my red ring? But you know, I've been raging against a lot of things lately, and right now it's more like a cold burning, whatever kind of rage.
Your Soviet Union Cold War against Fox for a Fantastic Four film, yeah.
And you know, like I said, when we reviewed you know, the movie that would be a Fantastic Four film,
Fantastic Four Stick.
That's so fucking funny.
I want to give credit to Maximilian Dude for saying that, and now I can never not call that movie that.
Fantastic Four Stick.
No, but you know, it wasn't a bad sci-fi film. It just wasn't a Fantastic Four movie. You know, just like the Nolan films, they were great Bruce Wayne movies, but they weren't Batman movies. Either way, I thought.
Controversial opinion.
Who am I if not controversial?
Fair.
Yeah.
Fair. Please.
You're our own Eric Bischoff.
Yeah. Yeah.
The wrestling
does that make me Vince Russo then?
No.
Who?
Thank God.
Yeah. No wrestling references.
Oh, okay. And anyway, I, you know what? I'll be perfectly honest. This sounds to me like, remember that rumor that was going around where Jack Black was supposed to be Hal Jordan in a Green Lantern movie, and I really want to get upset by this, but I just can't. It's I'm too raged out and nonplussed to actually care that much about this development. I really do not care. You know, whatever comes down the pike in regards to this is what comes down the pike. I don't give a rat's ass about a Fantastic Four movie. They can even make them all black, and I still wouldn't care enough to complain about it. Because I would complain about it. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, that's what you do. You complain about things. So, you know.
Well, I mean, Dave, did you see that, remember that Honeymooners movie that came out with Cedric the Entertainer?
No.
With the all-black cast? Yeah.
I successfully blocked that out. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so, yeah, I raged against that because it was fucking lame. And
I blacked it out,
it
yeah.
Was worse. Yes, remember! I don't care. I just don't. You know, so it's whatever.
All right. So let's move on to our final bit of news, which is gonna has pissed me the fuck off for the better past of a week and a half.
And yet, Marvel wanted to talk about it. So.
Because I need a fucking rage about it. Because it's fucking stupid. Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite releases in 2 months. It's despite that Chun-Li looks like a piece of shit right now, it's still one of my more anticipated games because it's fucking Marvel. You know, it's Marvel. I was playing Marvel vs. Capcom 1 last night, and it was fun to play as. And we already knew beforehand that because of some stupid opposed licensing shit that Marvel won't put X-Men characters in it, despite that if you look at a lot of their mobile games, they put a lot of X-Men shit in there, so it's odd. So it's just more of, we don't want it, we want to push our shit first before we push the other guy's shit, which is stupid because it's all your shit regardless. Anyways, so in interview with, who the fucking names, with producers Peter Rosa and Michael Evans, they gave reasons why Wolverine, Storm, who are two of the most, one of the more iconic characters in the Marvel Versus series, here's one of them was the fact that they are functions, and the reason why people liked Magneto in Marvel vs. Capcom 2 is because he has an 8-way dash. Well, guess what? Ultron can do that, and this character did that, and so you have that. I don't care if you like Magneto. Like, never consideration that somebody could just like Magneto and just want to play as Magneto. That's absurd. That's absurd. And here's the one that fucking gets me the most. It pisses me off. The third is obviously the popularity of these X characters. Of these characters. X was one we had to get in there. A lot of fans, in referring to Mega Man X. A lot of fans wanted to see X, so we brought him back. Then we talked to Marvel very closely about their future roadmap, of what's going to be happening. X explained in the GameSpot interview. Your modern Marvel fan, maybe they don't even remember some of the X-Men characters, but they know some of the Guardians characters or Black Panther, you know what I mean? Captain Marvel would seem like a strange pick, but she's fantastic. She fits in the gameplay, she fits the story, and they're going to be really pushing her as a strong female lead all the way up to her movie. We're trying to take into everything account and choose the best characters. That's the fucking biggest sort of horse shit I've ever fucking heard of. Look, I understand that modern Marvel fans who were born after 2005, which is a fucking thing now, and that scares the living daylights out of me, may not have the affinity that the X-Men characters that I had growing up in the early to mid-90s, where it was X-Men everywhere. They were the biggest thing. They were the hottest thing on the stands. And tons of characters, tons of costumes, tons of video games, tons of everything. X-Men was everywhere. I get that they are not as popular as they used to be. They're not. A lot of us do with the fact that Marvel doesn't want to push them that far. Ever since days, I want to say 2006. Like, it feels like ever since then, they want to disassociate themselves.
It's because of the movies, basically.
Yeah, but even before like First Class, there was an effort before. I would say after Iron Man, once they started success with that, well, we have our own shit, let's promote our own shit. But to say they're not memorable, to say that a character like Wolverine is not memorable, or Storm is not memorable, or Magneto is not memorable, is such the biggest sort of horseshit as to give any reason why these characters won't be it. Just say it's a conflict. You know what you could have said that would not have gotten you fucking killed and maybe killed your game sales? Because right now, the competitive communities, right now the game is not looking very well right now from a lot of people's standpoints. So, You know how you could have avoided all this? Instead of saying, nobody remembers those silly X-Men, you could have just said, there's a lot of complications, there's a lot of thought in what goes into the choices of this roster. We take everything into consideration, and we will think about it. You don't fucking say, nobody remembers them. The modern Marvel fan doesn't remember them. Because that's horseshit. Almost a year ago, they had a big movie come out starring the main X-Men characters. Wolverine just had Logan recently, celebrating the end of Hugh Jackman's end as that character. You telling me these fuckers don't remember? You're full of shit with that quote. Why say that? Maybe it was the heat of the moment and you were trying to find something. Either way, my point is that if that's their fucking excuse, their public excuse to not include X-Men characters, that's horseshit. Not everybody's going to know every single X-Man, right? But I guarantee you, right, San Diego Comic-Con is in 2 weeks. There's a Marvel Scott Comic Infinite panel.
Comic-Con!
Right? There's a panel for Marvel Scott, and it's like, well, we have special announcement to make on who some future characters that are going to be in the game. And it just shows, and it just says, Gambit. People would lose their shit if it was just Gambit. Because there are plenty of people who fucking love Gambit who are now my age, a little bit older, a little bit younger. Or if they just said, and after the first wave of DLC, here's the second wave of DLC, it's all X-Men characters, people would lose their shit, it would trend on Twitter, it would go crazy. I may be coming as an X-Men bias, but that's fucking stupid to say nobody remembers these characters. If you were to say, the Inhumans, yeah, you would be right, nobody remembers those characters. That would be valid. But you gotta be fucking kidding me. This is the utter lord of horse shit. I'm done.
Rage.
Y'all have anything else to say to this shenanigans?
I got nothing.
I got nothing neither. It's a bunch of horseshit. That whole licensing bullshit that they just can't get through. It's ridiculous.
All right, Brian, do you have anything to say about all this?
Well, yeah. I mean, the fact that they're not memorable is pretty bullshit. But I mean, some of the most memorable characters I remember from playing that game back in the day were the X-Men characters. I remember Cyclops, Magneto, I think Juggernaut was in there too at one point or another, Apocalypse.
Optic Blast, that's all it was.
Who doesn't love the Optic Blast, right? Like, give me that shit. But I just think it's so bad that, you know, just that it really is horseshit. Because I know why they're doing it, and I can understand it even, but I don't support it. I don't, you know, sympathize with it. And it's taking awesome characters off the table who would otherwise be great inclusions, you know, for the series. And characters who have proven that they have staying power over the course of the series. I mean, they threw in Deadpool, I think, for the first time. Or what game? Was that the 3? Was it 3? Or was it 4? 3? 4?
What, Ultimate? Or Marvel vs. Capcom?
One more Deadpool was included, where he, like...
That was 3. That's yeah, 3. Ultimate is 4.
Fair enough. I lost count for a second. You know, it just kind of grates me that they would go that far as to say that. And it is horse shit. And, you know, whether or not they bring back any of the characters in the next installment or is even DLC, I mean, it just sucks that there's this whole rift in Marvel where they can't use their own characters for these properties and stuff. Or if they can, they just refuse to. Like, that's horse shit. So, I don't know. Overall, I'm disappointed because it deprives us of a really cool roster. I suppose I'll just have to hope, possibly in vain, that the rest of the roster and the rest of the game will make up for it. But I don't know. We'll see.
All right. Let's move on to our individual reviews. And I'm going first with Secret Empire number 5, Andrea Sorrentino Returns on Art, who actually did not hate this issue. Actually thought it was pretty good.
Wait, we're not doing Spectacular Spider-Man?
No, you weren't paying attention, old man. We're moving on. So basically, this issue was the heroes and the villains sort of playing run around the world to try to find shards of the Cosmic Cube. And one of my favorite issues was Tony going to Black Panther. This is probably my favorite conversation with the book, where basically they say, hey, give us the Cosmic Cube, you know, because we need to save Steve. And basically, Black Panther are like, no, because every fucking time you get a hold of one of these things, you do something to fuck things up even worse. I'm not doing that. If Steve Rogers, if the if the leader of Hydra, Steve Rogers, wants to come to my backyard and throw down, we'll fucking throw down. Basically, cock blocking Tony Stark from getting the shards. Also, Tony Stark is proving, or Tony Stark's in AI is proving inept, which is really fucking odd when I think about it, but whatever, that he built this machine to detect cosmic cube shards, yet this most of this issue is them jumping around and there's no cosmic cube shards. It's just remnants of the cosmic cube was there. That's it. So it's like everybody's losing faith in Tony and all these other shenanigans. But turns out, spoiler alert, John, you may want to close your ears for this one.
You're okay.
Bobby Morris is an agent of Hydra. She sold out the heroes as at the end of the issue is Hydra Steve letting loose the full weight of Hydra's fury on the Avengers Resistance base. So it's like, holy shit. So, and also, here's the other big fucking spoiler that nobody talked about. Remember how it was a big fucking deal last year when Hawkeye killed the Hulk or killed Bruce Banner? Yeah, he's alive.
Bruce Banner's alive?
Bruce Banner's alive. Like he. So I'll get the issue. Yeah, so it ends with Steve after they had just nuked the Avengers Resistance base. Zola and Steve Rogers are heading to this bunker, and they were talking about a procedure or whatever, and that it's deteriorating quickly. And basically, it's basically Bruce Banner sitting in this huge chamber. Bruce Banner, it's good to see you, old friend. So basically, Bruce Banner's alive, and Steve Rogers, forever how long, has been keeping him held in this prison. Although, I don't think, the way it makes it sound is like Bruce Banner has no idea what's going on. He doesn't know anything about Hydra Steve. He doesn't know nothing. And it seems like Steve is going to somehow use Hulk to annihilate any resistance members. I don't know how that's going to play out, but I was like, wait, what? Because I clearly remember seeing him get shot in the head by Hawkeye Zero.
Twice.
Yeah, twice. So it's like, somehow he's alive. Now, they did talk about that Zola's sort of... God, what the fuck did he say? God damn it.
All they have to say
you
is...
You should know, however, the procedure, it's only temporary. His condition will degrade quite quickly. Now, I don't know if that means the condition of his rage, but it might be a clone. I don't know. But as of right now, until next issue, Banner is alive, and Steve Rogers has been keeping has hit him away as a potential WMD, which is kind of fitting. So
or
yeah,
maybe as a sex slave.
I mean, possibly. But he has Madame Hydra for that. They're clearly boning.
Are you kidding? It's him and Zemo, dude. Let's be real here for just 2 seconds.
That's true. No, Zemo wants to bone. But Steve is all up in Matt Hydra's cooch.
Yeah. It's true. He's got a mommy complex. He's got a really bad one, man.
Seriously. Yeah, but let's... No, he might have wanted, you know, I've always fancied the Hulk as the Hulk. This way, I get to be the top for the Hulk. Yeah, boy.
Possibly. All right, but there you go. I thought it was a very good issue. But yeah, your big spoilers for this issue
are... That image is going to be in your mind for a while.
Yeah, it is. Now I just need to find a cover, a picture of Hulk and Steve teaming together. So basically, that's your spoiler. Bobby Morris, Mockingbird, is so whatever, it doesn't really show when, that she sold the heroes out and Bruce Banner, at this time, is alive. 4 out of 5. John, Spectacular Spider-Man number 1, save us.
That image is going to be in his head for a long time.
I have a mental image from Nutty Professor 2 that clumps with a big hamster.
Oh, wait a minute. What about South Park Bigger, Longer, Uncut? Yeah. The devil is Saddam Hussein. You like that, don't you, bitch?
Oh, God. Okay. Composed. Oh, God. I needed that. Okay. What was supposed to be the book of the week is now my individual review, and I'm thanking you for that because it was either going to be Weapons of Mutant Destruction or Luke Cage number 2. Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man, writer Chip Zdarsky, Adam Kubert on art. That right there makes an automatic 2.5 for me because I love Cooper's art. What can we say? Everything about a Spider-Man book that you would want to like about a Spider-Man book. Humor. That isn't Dan Slott humor. You see a girl that likes Spider-Man and gives him her phone, her card to hit on him and stuff. And you see Ant-Man, and you see them go to the hero's version of the Tinkerer, who winds up being the Tinkerer's brother. So we have a good guy version of the Tinkerer. Does all the, work on the technology and stuff for people. And for once, it's the Human Torch that gets stood up by somebody. And as he's waiting for Peter to go on a bro date, so to speak. And it's really kind of hard to get my composure here, but I will say this. I thoroughly enjoyed this book, and I highly recommend it because it's good old-fashioned Spider-Man. And at the end of the issue, you see him looking like he's going up against somebody wearing Iron Man's modular armor from back in the mid-90s, which that was right there was a thumbs up for me. And then at the end of it, you see Peter Parker's sister from the one-shot graphic novel they did. And and you're going, whoa, he has a sister? And I'm like,
yeah,
oh,
she was
cool.
A clone, I think, or something. She was something, but she wasn't his sister in the graphic novel.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, hold on. Flag on the play. Which graphic novel was this?
I have it.
I think it's called Family Matters or Family Divide.
Yeah, Spider-Man OGN Family Matters. It came out like 3 years ago.
Oh,
yeah.
Is that the one with Delotto on the artwork?
Yeah, that was the hype that Spider-Man has a sister, Teresa Parker, and turns out she wasn't the sister at the end of the story. I don't remember what it was because I haven't read it in a while.
I think it was
a
mind control thing. It was like Mastermind or somebody like that. It
okay.
was some sort of
well,
mind control involved. So.
Now somebody else named Teresa Parker is back and
up.
Saying that
yep.
she, yeah.
And I will say this. I give it 4 stars out of 5 because it was an enjoyable read. And I'm not going to bash, Slott by any means because...
No, go ahead. He's a hack writer.
No, I'm going to say we got a gentleman in the corner for that because half of what Slott does I like. The other half, unfortunately, goes completely kind of like Bendis on his runs on anything that's not Spider-Man. So we'll leave it at that. But Jip Sadarsky is doing a good job so far with the first issue. We'll see how it goes. I'm going to be picking up issue 2. And
okay. I would like to counter-inject, or whatever that word is, where I give opposition to something that was just
you
said.
Object.
Just,
you object.
Yes, there you go. That word right there.
Counterpoint, basically.
Boom!
Be like
on ship.
Someone cue the Phoenix Wright music. Objection! And then
objection! Now, you know what? I read this really quickly because I thought we were going to have to read this. And then Ben changed his mind and didn't tell me because
no, I told
me.
I said it.
I didn't hear it.
No.
It didn't happen. I didn't hear it.
You're old man.
I didn't
that's
hear
why.
It. Shut up, you Texan. Anyway, the first page of this is like the quickest recounting of almost the complete quickest recounting of Spider-Man origin you'll get in a comic book. And you find out that he's telling this to Johnny Storm for really no fucking reason at all other than, well, it's a great story. And I'm sorry. If we're dealing with a Spider-Man who has the tenure that, we assume that he has, and the relationship that he has with Johnny says it himself. You've told this like 1,000 times. Why the hell would you write a story where Peter Parker, and still wearing, he's in Spider-Man garb, is telling this to Johnny Storm as they're eating shawarma up on, the 86th floor of some fucking building?
Well, he didn't find it funny. That's what I thought was funny about it.
Not at all. Because when you look at how Peter Parker, I keep saying Peter Parker, when you look at how Spider-Man is behaving almost throughout the entire run of this book, it's as if nobody else had ever read a Spider-Man comic before, so he talks like he has to give people hints about what the fuck he's doing. He talks like he, not only that, but he talks like he's only been Spider-Man for a small amount of time. You know, his internal monologue is external now. Like the dialogue that he had with him, Ant-Man, and the Tinkerer's brother. I thought that was a good one, the Tinkerer's brother. Holy shit. And it's not a bad idea, don't get me wrong, but anyway, I could ignore him, but the dialogue there is like, it's so attempting to be self-explanatory, attempting to be a window into the Spider-Man-ness. It was wrong, and it was off. You know, I didn't like it at all. The little tidbits of seeing Falcon show up with, hey, thank you for fixing my wing. Well, that's like, as CinemaSins would say, it's a mountain of evidence to show that this person has been here for a while, even though we're just introduced to him in this one fucking comic, you know? And he just casually starts fixing this, and he fixes Ant-Man, who showed up because his helmet is damaged, and he only grows to about, like, 4'9". You know, just fixes that, and, you know, there's a character named Uatu Jackson, who's a black guy wearing a hoodie.
And he's from one of the slots.
Yeah, that's an old, that's character's been there for a while.
Which is fine, but, you know, I didn't read any of that, and I just kind of went, a black guy named Uatu. Did somebody give him that name, or was he actually named that by
Brian? He was called Uatu when we first saw him.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a stupid millennial thing.
Anyway,
watch out for it.
Yeah. they give you the story hook of some random thug mugging some fashion chick who's dark skinned. Peter Parker's dating a dark skinned chick. Whoa.
What is he, Captain America in the 1980s?
Hi-o. She actually kicks it towards him. She's like, "Yeah, Spider-Man, you saved my life. I think I'm gonna dig you. Here's my number. I'll give you a call." And he's, you know, a bit rambly, a bit surprised. He calls her up later on. They make a date. He goes, of course, to handle that other business about the hack phone. And that's when he runs into as Jonathan said, whoever is in that Iron Man outfit from the 90s.
He's not gonna.
I hated that suit. I really did. That is an ugly fucking suit. I really do not like that suit. And you know he's not gonna make that date because this is Peter Parker. Peter Parker does not have good luck with women and does not have good luck in life. So he's naturally not going to. If he makes the date, it's gonna be like just as she's about to walk away after having been there for like 2 hours. Everything the way Parker. The way Spider-Man talks is really the big issue here because it's so we're trying to fill you in on Spider-Man as if there was never a Spider-Man book before this one. And that's annoying at this point. Spider-Man has been in production for what? 50, 60 years? You know, you don't have to write him this way. That in and of itself, that's the big issue I have with this book. The way the man himself spoke. You know, I don't know if maybe he'll get rid of that Chip, whatever the fuck his name is. Maybe that'll change come the next issue. I hope it does. I won't be there to read it because I still don't really care about Spider-Man at this point. But if it does, I would actually suggest to anybody who's listening to my voice now, if you enjoy Spider-Man and you enjoy the book, keep reading it. But be careful. If you feel it's a bit heavy, drop it. Run away. Run far the fuck away. As a matter of fact, pick up Old Man Logan. You know, pick up something else. Leave this book alone, and then maybe Marvel will get the hit. Stop doing this shit. All right, there's my review. Oh, yeah.
Continue.
2 Warriors out of 5. There you go.
Continue with your reviews with Cage.
He gets 2 reviews? That's not fair.
I'll be jumping into.
Yeah, well, he also read the same book.
Brian, they're also people of color. He's also a person of color. He gets special privilege.
I get extra, and I'm from Evergreen College.
And I'm an inside Oreo, so I get to.
Cage has a story that logically should have taken about 6 or 7 pages to tell, but the writer had to stretch all of the dialogue into like maybe 3 lines, which basically meant 1 or 2 sentences per panel for maybe about 4 to 5 panels per page. This whole thing was one stretched out conversation. It within the 22 pages that this book has, it's too fucking long. You know, Cage himself gets bandaged up by some guy who he hadn't talked to in a long period of time, that person that I didn't even know about, to be perfectly honest, but, you know, I'm not that great a historian, and who's also blue, go fucking figure, and he's surprised that I got cut by a blade. That shouldn't happen. I have unbreakable skin. Fuck you. Blade, he's been hit by adamantium? Hello? Hello? No, this is some new type of weapon that nobody's ever heard of before. Fuck you, people. Anyway.
Oh, my, that sounds like a Netflix series waiting to happen.
And the other half is the woman that got kidnapped in the first book, the one who was the understudy to Professor whatever the fuck his name is. You fix my boy, or else I'ma kill you and everybody that you know about. No, don't do that. And the patient himself, who was the guy who kicked Cage's ass, he's apparently on some type of chemical cocktail that keeps him normal. And if he goes off of it, he'll go crazy.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's really it. I mean, I swear to you, people. This book is so light on any type of meaty depth. You know, it's ridiculous, and I honestly do mean that. When you see Cage's section of this book where he's talking with Warhawk, and you know he's trying to get info out of him, and Warhawk, because he's apparently half crazy because he went through the same experiments, he's not giving him. He doesn't really give him, you know, a whole lot of information. He takes him somewhere, shows him somebody else who's also, you know, got hard skin and probably strong, whatever. And then they end up at the mobster's house. But, oh no, crazy-ass son breaks through with all blue and whatever. All of the dialogue that happens between him and Warhawk should have taken like 2 panels. But when you look at how it's spaced out, it's 1 sentence for each of them per panel. It's fucking ridiculous. This book, it's like the writer, you know, wrote it, or at least he plotted it while he was on the can and said, okay, I'm going to time myself between the first squeeze and when I finally start to wipe, and that'll be the issue right there. Whatever I finish, that's it. You know, I'm not writing anything else. So, here we go. You know, I just, you know, excuse the trains. I can't really help that. But now, this book, oh, man, this book was a waste. I wouldn't even give this 2 warriors out of 5. I'd give this 1. The art is doable. You know, the art gets the job done, but the writing, even the story itself is interesting, but the writing sucks. It sucks. And if you know anything about me, you know I generally don't pay that much attention to the writing, you know, because it's more about the circumstances. But this writing's atrocious. It's lame. It's lazy. It's all fucking full. So, yeah, I'm giving this a 1 warrior out of 5. Don't touch this fucking book.
I will agree with that. It was a letdown after the first issue. The writing, yeah, that's the main crime, is the writing. The art is passable. Would like to see better art, but, decent art. I can handle, you know, deal as long as the writing is good and smooth. Like Taser so graphically described, I think the writer was doing things in to certain timings of bodily functions on this one. It was disappointing to me, but although I will give it a little bit of a higher rating, I give it a 2 out of 5, mainly for the art. And, you know, I like the idea of the actual story itself. They need to get another writer in here. So, there you go.
All right, Brian, bring us home.
All right, I'm doing Nick Fury number 3. Another self.
You're fired. You're done. No, we're not doing this. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to another episode of the Mighty Warriors Team Marvel Podcast. I'm kidding. Brian's going to get his review.
You're getting the review, sir. Don't worry about it. Brought to you by Tony Stark's House of Ribs.
God, I wish I had some ribs right now.
The other day was phenomenal.
So, Nick Fury number 3, I love this series. I am unashamed. It's so good. they're all self-contained little escapades, and this one is about Nick Fury boarding a train. It's a pan-South American railway that travels from Mexico all the way to Tierra del Fuego. And there's this bad general guy on there who allies with the cartels and stuff, and he's being targeted for assassination. And Nick Fury has to take out one assassin, then 2 assassins, then 3 assassins. And it's all told in expertly illustrated fashion. I mean, I'm going to get the book because I actually put it away for a second, but that was foolish of me because I want to sing the artist's praises. This issue was called The Assassination Locomotion Caper. Great name. Did we decide if it's Akko or Aso or however you pronounce that? I'm gonna go with Akko, I guess. But penciler on this, and big ups to the inker and colorer Hugo Petrus and Rochelle Rosenberg, respectively. The book is beyond amazing. I mean, it's Nick Fury doing the cool spy thing, and there's a lady on board who he gets down with later in the book, and it's all told in expertly illustrated high-color fashion. It's flawless and amazing. I dig the shit out of it. And you know what? If you're a fan of Nick Fury, like legit OG Nick Fury, you're probably going to like this book, even though it's not legit OG Nick Fury. It's just fun, and it's thrilling, and the illustrations are captivating. I almost feel bad reviewing this one, because I could say the same thing about every single issue so far, and it's throughout. It's, even though I feel like it's a lot more visual storytelling, it's some of James Robinson's most consistently thrilling and consistently good storytelling, because he can have peaks and valleys and whatnot, but... as far as this series goes, 3 issues in, he's been top-notch form so far. Akko, as the penciler, has been fantastic. It's just a thrill to read and a thrill to look at. So, honestly, I gotta give this book... Oh, Jesus. I mean, I really can't think of anything to deduct points for. It's a 5 out of 5 for me. It's legit, guys. Seriously. I'll sit here and review every issue as it comes out as many times as it takes to convince you all to read this book, but it's just...
Is it too legit to quit?
It is not too legit to quit.
Okay.
But it is too legit, but it's not too legit to quit. There's a difference. It's a distinction there. It's not going to quit. And by that, I mean, I hope it doesn't get canceled. but no, I mean, I just get a thrill out of it, and you are depriving yourselves of bombastic, bright, big, fun, spy escapade adventure storytelling if you're not reading this book. So 5 out of 5 for me. I really don't know what to say anymore.
You're wrong. Let's close it out, ladies and gentlemen, for another episode of the Mighty Warriors Team Marvel Podcast. Be safe traveling 4th of July. By the time this gets posted, it will be the 4th of July. Hope you enjoy the Captain America theme, which fits, considering we talked about a Captain America sexual orientation a lot, so it kind of fits.
Captain
it all fits.
Captain America taking a flagstaff up the...
hi-yo!
Hey-yo!
For the good old US of A. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you're for...
It would have fit.
Yeah.
Are you sure it's going to?
Hey! Oh.
Be safe traveling for the 4th. A lot of fucking stupid assholes who don't know how to drive out there. Pop fireworks accordingly. Don't go too crazy.
We've already
and,
had
fire
naming stories around here already. They've already been popping off, literally and figuratively. Yeah. Dude lost 3 fingers. He split his palm in half, and he burned off, like, part of his nutsack.
And I encourage the entire...
And you know who else popped off? Captain America inside the Hulk. Hey!
And I encourage all the people of New Jersey to raid the beaches.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think they're actually open now. Never mind.
Storm the beaches like Normandy. It'll be great.
Exactly. No, storm his fucking house and just sit out there.
You know who else
well, not
stormed
4th of
the
July.
Beaches like Normandy? Captain America inside the Hulk. Hey!
You know what? If you're gonna storm Chrissy's
house. All right, we're calling it right there. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. See you all fuckers in 2 weeks.
For a
you know who else?